Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our second interview, our second segment, we want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And you can email us at info@eradiosports.com. We also want to take time to tip our hat to our premier corporate partner and sponsor, the friends and folks at Western Company of Texas. Join them online at wct.us.com. I tell you what, it's hard to believe. College football, the countdown, it is officially on. We are 1 week away from kickoff, and we have just talked in our first segment some TCU football with Gary Patterson, TCU's head coach. And now we're going to shift avenues. We're going to go south on I-35. We're going to talk some Texas football and do a little bit of a Texas two-step with our good friend, the contributing writer from Horns Illustrated, Steve Habel. Steve, how are you today?
I'm great, Elissa. Thanks for having me back.
And I understand you are actually not in Austin this weekend, but you are up in, Michigan, where the temperatures are a chilly 48 degrees at night and the high gets up to 70 in the afternoon. Is that correct?
It's been quite a change from Central Texas, Elissa. I'll say that for sure.
Well, I was teasing Coach Patterson in our first segment. I was saying that Mother Nature has been on his side this past week because a little bit of a cold front coming through Fort Worth, and it was down to like 79 degrees last night, and I thought, boy, this was certainly a change. But let's head into Austin. Let's talk about what's been going on at fall camp. Let's begin our conversation there. How are things progressing? How is this team coming together? They've got obviously a young leader with their new quarterback.
Yes, Garrett Gilbert is the lead, unquestioned leader of the team now. He's really been impressive from what we've been able to see in scrimmages and what they let the press see. Of course, we knew that he was strong last year from his performance against Alabama in the national championship game. But he... It's going to be his team this year, and they're tailoring it to his strengths, and they're going to try to run the ball a little bit more this year. Try to do some downhill running, hand off the ball deep into the in the backfield rather than out of the shotgun set. But Elissa, the strength of the team is going to be the defense this year. There may be 22 guys right now that could start on this team, and you know they're pretty much interchangeable. Especially in the secondary, even though Texas loses a couple of guys from the secondary, including Earl Thomas last year, who was a number one draft pick, first-round draft pick, they're not going to miss too much back in the backfield, believe it or not.
Steve Habel is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. He's the contributing writer with Horns Illustrated. I encourage you to go ahead and get a subscription to that particular magazine. And you want to talk about that as far as the strength for Texas is their defense. But let's back up a moment and talk some more about the quarterback, Garrett Gilbert. Of course, his bloodlines are very strong considering his father, what Gale. He was a member of three Super Bowl teams with Buffalo and San Diego in the NFL. I'm wondering, that's got to play a big part as far as his father kind of helping him along, mentoring him, and getting him ready for the big season ahead.
Well, there's no doubt about that, Elissa. I mean, Mr. Gilbert was an excellent backup quarterback in the NFL. I mean, even being a backup quarterback in the NFL is an accomplishment, as we all know. But, yeah, the acorn didn't fall from the tree there. You know, Garrett is very strong, very smart, savvy kid, even though he's only a sophomore. He's got a lot of arm strength and can run the ball. You know, he's 6'4", legitimate 6'4", 220, and will be getting bigger over the next couple of years. How much he runs the football is going to be a question because of the fact that Texas is weak after him in backup quarterbacks. So he's his strength will be drop back and hand the ball off and throw the ball out there and let the defense win games for him this year.
I think what impressed me the most about Garrett, you talk about him coming into this season, but I just back up and I think about that national championship game, just how mentally tough that he was. Because, you know, after a rocky start, he only completed one of his first 10 passes. I'm sure he was shell-shocked, you know, and wide-eyed going into that type of situation. But he really rebounded and showed so many flashes of promise that, you know, he perhaps is going to be very successful, not only in the Big 12 Conference, but down the road.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, remember during the national championship game when they put him in, they were shell-shocked. The coaching staff was shell-shocked. How are they going to use him? I mean, the whole game plan was to have McCoy run the football, you know, to attack the Alabama defense that way and to throw his do what McCoy does best. And when he got hurt, you know, Gilbert was put in there, and if you remember, he had a lot of third and long situations because Texas just tried to run the ball, try to get to halftime, try to get something going on, and, you know, get to where they could do something and maybe at half make some adjustments, which they're very good at. And so one out of 10 was a lot of those were on third down and 15, third down and 12, because Alabama's pretty stout defensively themselves.
Absolutely. Hey, Steve Habel, we're having a great conversation with him, talking Texas football for all you Texas fans, all you Longhorn fans out here in the great state. And, of course, talk a little bit about as far as how much, and you've kind of highlighted a little bit on this, but how much will the Longhorns' offense change with Gilbert now running the show? The Longhorns are going to use fewer shotgun formations than last season?
I think that's the plan right now, Alyssa. I mean, that's what we've been told ever since spring. You know, Texas doesn't have a real proven running back or a proven wide receiver. And of the two, the biggest hole of that is probably the wide receiver position. Over the past 4 years, 4.5 years, if you want to think about it that way, they've had Jordan Shipley throw the ball to. Before that, it was Quan Cosby. Before that, it was Lima Swede. Now they've got a good set of receivers, but they're not proven. Malcolm Williams, the coaches believe that he's sitting on a great season, that he could really be have a breakout year like Swede did in 2005. James Kirkendall will be a person that they go to a lot. John Child, the former quarterback, will get a lot of balls out of the slot this year. And then they've got some freshman receivers that are making an impact early on in camp.
I was going to say, yeah, who are some of those breakout players that are showing, you know, glimpses of promise and that could really be difference makers down the road?
Well, Texas has a couple of wide receivers that are coming in as freshmen. Mike Davis is one of them. And I think he's done the most in camp to show that he needs to be involved some way. It remains to be seen what happens when the actual lights go on next Saturday in Reliant Stadium. Actually, the lights won't be on. It'll be a 2:30 afternoon game, but you know, Texas has got they're not empty in the cupboard by any means. I mean, it's just a matter of distributing the ball and finding out who's going to be the leaders of the team.
I kind of hesitate, and I want to ask you this, Steve: is this, you know, a transition season for Texas? Is that accurate? Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say, Alyssa. I mean, remember that McCoy went through that too, but he went through it as a redshirt freshman, not a true sophomore like Gilbert is doing. I think that Texas is pretty stocked. They're loaded across their skill positions. It's just because they haven't had these kids really have to prove themselves, because McCoy and Shipley and the guys that they had last year were just so much emphasis of the team. And, you know, these guys come to Texas just like they do to Oklahoma and Nebraska and all these other big schools, with an opportunity to make themselves into great players. And, you know, I think this is a year that we'll see some guys step up. And if not, you know, you might be looking at a couple losses. If they do, then you never can tell what happens.
Hang, you know, I talk about transition, but I think back a year ago, let's talk some, you know, people, especially in this Dallas-Fort Worth market, we love hearing about Trey Newton. Just, wow, what a season he had.
Yeah, he had a great year last year. I think he was, I don't think he was a surprise for the staff at Texas, but they knew that he had the speed and could catch the ball out of the backfield. Could run the ball hard, and I believe he came into fall training as the number one back. Him and Fozzie Whitaker were co-number ones, and now, you know, I think that Newton is probably the guy. You know, we'll see what happens. And you know, Cody Johnson has also been getting some snaps, and they say that he has lost a lot of weight and is moving around well, and that's okay. But he has to stay healthy, so you know, I think it's going to be, you know, maybe a 60-40, maybe a 60-30-20, I guess a 60-30-10.
Kind of mixing it up.
That's split between the three of those guys. You know, and Texas will have the first part of the year, at least the first couple games, to get their feet under them and see who's going to be that guy.
Well, you know, as you think about, as far as, you know, here we are highlighting the feature backs, Trey Newton, Fozzie Whitaker, you know, battling for that starting position. But, you know, Newton really, he lacked that consistency early in his career. And, you know, Whitaker, he's been susceptible to his injuries. I'm trying to think of some of them, you know, off the top of my head. But, you know, perhaps, you know, Trey will have that edge because of his durability, because of his production.
Well, I think that's what they're hoping, too. I think that the coaches are hoping that. He's really shown a lot. He's got stronger. He's been fast. Everybody knows he can run. And he's great out of the backfield with the ball, and that'll be a big part of the offense this year, because Gilbert will check down quite a bit to get rid of the ball quick. So it's just, it remains to be seen. Like I said, you know, first game against Rice next week. The week after that, Wyoming at home. Two times for those guys to prove that they belong in the big time before Texas Tech in the third game of the year.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about the schedule, because I have to tell you, I think it lines up very nicely for the Longhorns, starting things off, as you had just said, next Saturday against Rice. And did you say that's a 2:30 kickoff?
It is a 2:30 kickoff in Reliant Stadium, but the roof will be closed. Because it was going to be hot if it wasn't. But I think Texas, you know, remember that 4 years ago it was McCoy got to start at Rice as well.
Has that been 4 years ago?
Hard to believe that. He had a chance, and, you know, it would be interesting to see if he comes out, if Gilbert comes out and attacks like McCoy was able to in that first game.
Well, I'm sure he will definitely be amped up for that particular game. And then September 11th, it's Wyoming. And I was kind of teasing you a little bit before we came on air today. I mean, what is the love affair with Wyoming? I mean, this is the second year in a row that you guys will be playing them.
Well, Wyoming is was a good team to get healthy on, I guess, or learn a little bit about yourself. Last year when we went up to Laramie to watch Texas and Wyoming play, it was the biggest game in the history of Wyoming football. And
did you go to that game?
I certainly did. And it was an interesting affair up there. I mean, their stadium seats about 32,000, and, Texas had a hard time getting their allotted tickets that they wanted. But they and Texas was flat in the first half, but they came out and took care of business in the second half. I don't think that Wyoming is going to pose much of a challenge to Texas, even though they did win a bowl game last year. So.
And then September 18th at Texas Tech, Tommy Tuberville. What kind of job do you think that he's going to do there at Texas Tech? From what I understand at the Big 12 Media Days, he's just a very interesting person and gives great quotes for us media folks.
Well, the media guys love Tuberville because of that, and he's outspoken. He'll speak his mind, but of course they're used to that in Lubbock. But, I think this is, talking about transition years, this has got to be a transition year for Tech. I mean, they're moving to a more of a situation where they're not passing as much as they were in the past, and they may not run from the spread as much, depending on their personnel. But it's, you know, anytime Texas and Texas Tech get involved in a game in Lubbock on a Saturday night in September or whenever, it's always a rowdy affair. And I always look forward to going back to Lubbock. I spent 7 long months as a journalist there, so I always enjoy going back to watch games there.
We are going one-on-one with Steve Habel. He is the contributing writer with Horns Illustrated. Of course, Steve, direct all of our Longhorn fans where they can go and get a copy of this particular magazine. We're going to take time to shift avenues completely. We're going to talk some golf. Always love teeing it up with Steve Habel. He's always traveling all across the country, sometimes even internationally, covering the sport of golf. So tell all of our listeners where they can go and get a copy of this subscription.
Well, if you want to check on Texas sports, please go to hornsillustrated.com. Good magazine, good site. The site is in transition too. Expect to see some more new stuff on the site by the time Texas OU runs around. And it's a good magazine. It's a good content. We're not a Homer magazine. We don't root for the Horns, and we tell it like it is.
And of course, you always have some great articles featured in there. Kind of give us a little bit of a sneak peek for some of the folks. What was the last article that you were able to put forward?
I did a profile of the receivers for this coming year, and talking about their need to step up and pick up the slack for Gilbert. It's going to be a transition phase, like we talked about, for Gilbert and for the receivers, because they've not proven it yet. Neither one of them, neither the quarterback or the receivers, are real proven. So, you know, that they worked hard in the offseason. Every indication of their scrimmage is that they're on the same page. So looking forward to seeing how that works out.
Well, the receivers certainly will have a big challenge, too. September 25th, and, you know, that particular game against UCLA, that's going to be at home. And do you know what network is going to be televising that particular game? Or
that's an ABC game. Either they haven't decided the time yet, either a 2 or a 7:30. But it'd be interesting that when UCLA comes into town, the last time they came to Texas, they really put a whooping on Texas.
What year was that?
I don't remember the exact year, but I remember it was the 90s, and it was a Bob Toledo coach team, and it might have been a 63-10 game or something like that. And then the next year, Texas got whipped up pretty good too. That was the end of the Makovic era. I remember that. So I don't think UCLA is quite as stocked as they were in those days, but they they bring up a great tradition, and it'll be good to see them here.
Yeah, I'm seeing a stat in front of me. The series is tied at 2, but the last meeting was what, in 98, and that was Brown's first year. And then, of course, I'm a bit surprised at the scheduling as far as with Oklahoma. It's much earlier this year. Remember last year, Steve, we had talked about this, how the UT-Oklahoma game, that it was later in the year, I believe October 17th. That was right before my son's birthday. So, but why so early this season?
I think it's just a matter of scheduling for the rest of the year. I mean, you know, I think that, if I'm not mistaken, I think Thanksgiving comes a little bit earlier this year, too. And it's a, you know, they've moved the schedule. The schedule started later last year or something. I don't remember. I don't remember why they had it so early or late last year, but or they're having it early this year. It's a, you know, they got to do it around the state fair. I guess they're doing the state fair at that same time. So, I mean, that part of the schedule for Texas, when they go to, they have UCLA at home, they have Oklahoma at the neutral site, and then, of course, they have an off week, and then they go to Nebraska. That is going to be
a great game, and I'm actually going to be up there for Jason Peters' celebrity golf tournament. I will be in Lincoln. Perhaps I can convince my husband for us to stick around for the whole weekend. Check out that particular game. That is going to be not a lot of love lost between those two teams.
No, in fact, I don't know if you had heard about a big national or international redout day that the Huskers are putting together for that day for the Texas home game, or the day that they have Texas at home. And they actually, in their first promo of it, they talked about wear red, be proud, and beat Texas. And then they have come back to amend that to take the beat Texas out, because they felt like it wasn't just about beating Texas, it was about Nebraska pride and what they show up there. So I don't think they're... that there's any doubt that it's going to be a crazy game up there after what we saw in Dallas last year at the Big 12 Championship and what's gone on since then with the Big 12 conference kind of imploding.
Yes, and the realignment. I'm a little nervous, I have to tell you, make the confession. We are going to be driving up to go to that tournament, and with my Texas license plate, I thought, gosh, I'm a little nervous about going up there, because those Husker fans, they're very passionate about their team. Hey, Steve Habel is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We got plenty of time on our show, and we're just kind of breaking down the Texas Longhorn, their schedule. I'm a little puzzled. Why Florida Atlantic November 20th?
Florida Atlantic is November 20th because that was originally scheduled for September, where the Texas Tech game is. They moved the Texas Tech game up the past 2 years to facilitate television on a Saturday night in September. And so Florida Atlantic has just dropped back into the schedule. Last year it was Central Florida that got moved back, but this year it's Florida Atlantic.
Steve Habel is along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to our premier sponsor, their website, wct.us.com. And let's continue with our conversation, talking some more about as far as the running backs. What is the update with Vondrell McGee? I mean, is he going to miss any games this year after being charged with driving while intoxicated in the month of April in Austin?
You know, Alyssa, they haven't said much about that.
I'm sorry to bring that up, but I just, you know, I'm curious about it. He's a key player.
He is a key player. He's been a part of this, big part of the team in the past. You know, they haven't said much about Vondrell since fall started. They haven't said much about his punishment. They said at the time it was going to be an internal thing. You know, Vondrell obviously is the fact that he's missed some time and he's slipped down in favor with the coaches is going to be, you know, third or fourth on the list now. You know, if even further back than that. So he might be able to make some time on the special teams, which is what he did last year to get turned it. The coach's head, and then he got into some opportunities to run the ball later in the year. But Vondrell is a question mark. I mean, I think he's got a lot of work to do to get back to where he needs to be.
You know, and it's you hear things like this happen. It's so disappointing, but, I mean, it happens really almost with every program. I mean, you just open up the paper, go online, you see these kinds of things happening all the time, and you hope that it certainly doesn't. Steve, how many years, I wanted to ask you this, how many years have you been covering? You actually were a part of the program, but how many years have you been covering UT football, and what is it like as far as with the media and the accessibility? I mean, I know many of the teams across the country right now, you know, their practices are completely closed to media. Those practices are completely covered.
I've been covering Texas football since 1994 for Horns Illustrated, so I've seen a lot of stuff. Coach Brown closed practices a couple years ago, actually, when Jordan Shipley got hurt during a practice. It was found out that some people who were there watching the practice actually Twittered about Shipley's injury before the coaching staff and the athletic people could get a hold Shipley's parents to let him know he got hurt. And so that was what was the impetus behind closing Texas practices. I think that that's pretty much across the board now. They just don't want the social media stuff that we have going on and how everything is so viral. They just want to be extra careful.
You know, in a similar situation, from what I understand, happened at the University of Nebraska, Bo Pelini actually, I think it was one of the coach's friends, was just there taking in practice, and he had emailed or tweeted, he had actually tweeted a very similar situation, and that really, you know, that's when he went ahead and just closed things up and shut down practice. But spending time around, as far as the defensive coordinator, Will Muschamp, what's this guy like? 39 years old, very passionate, very animated on the sideline, but he's the kind of guy that, gosh, you'd love to play for, because he just gets in your heart, he gets in your head, and he makes you want to play your best.
Yeah, he's a real fire plug. I mean, we all knew that when he came to Texas, and he's made a good defense even better. The kids play with the same enthusiasm that he shows as a coach. It remains to be seen how that enthusiasm carries over to when he becomes head coach at Texas when Coach Brown leaves, but because he's a young man, and he's obviously got a lot of fire in his belly to make things happen. He's an exciting guy to be around. I mean, I would love to play football for him. He's he seems like he would be ready to put on a helmet and get him jumping in the huddle anytime he could.
How many more years do you think Mac Brown has? I'm going to guess here. What is he? 56 years old.
That is really the $64,000 question. If we can go back to that old show, Coach Brown is in good shape. He likes coaching. He likes recruiting, which is a big deal about coaching. You have to like recruiting, and he's. I think there is a timetable. He's not letting us know it for sure. I don't think they're going to hold Coach Muschamp, on a leash for so long, because they probably gave him a time when he could coach. We're not privy to that time. If I was guessing, I'd say that he makes it through the Gilbert, the Garrett Gilbert era, and then he comes in, maybe say 2013, 2014, a new coach. I don't know. So that's really a crapshoot to even talk about.
Mac Brown, of course, in his 13th season at Texas, I guess the question I've got to ask you is, he seems like a really nice guy, but how has he been able to maintain a level of consistency?
Well, because he's straight up with the kids. I mean, that's really what he's, Coach Brown was really, talked about as being a coach that won from recruiting. I mean, he did his work during the offseason, got kids to come to Texas, and then when they got here, it was up to somebody else to coach him up. I think that's a misconception. I think Brown is a good football coach for everything he does. He's a good recruiter. He's good with his assistants. He's a good organizer, good with the kids. And one thing about Brown is you've never heard a kid that comes to Texas say that Coach Brown lied to him. You see a lot of that. You see that in a lot of places where kids have been told things that didn't come about, or they've been told things that, they promised things and it didn't work out. I mean, Coach Brown is very straight up with these guys, and that's what makes a difference. You've got a talent level at Texas that's expected, but Brown handles that. I mean, he knows that he's on a hot seat every year to make things happen, and you don't think it's a squirmy hot seat right now when people are thinking about, maybe a 9-3 or a 10-2 season even before we get started here. And there's people saying, well, does that mean if he goes 9-3, does that mean Muschamp comes in next year? I mean, how short-sighted is that? I mean, the guy's been around for so long doing such a great job. But to be quite honest with you, every time that I've talked to Mac Brown in a professional situation and in a personal situation, he's been personable. He's been very gracious. And, I think that goes a long way with the kids, too.
I was going to say, what is the forecast? You're talking about a 9-3 record. As far as what's your prognostications? Give us that journalistic perspective and point of view, Steve Hable. What do you think? I mean, you've been around this program for many, many years. You've covered this team.
Well, I have a hard time sitting down with the schedule and thinking who's going to win this game, who's going to win that game. I mean, it would be hard to fathom Texas going undefeated in a season when they're in transition, especially with some of the games they have, Nebraska on the road. Oklahoma, who will be good. I think 9-3 is the least we can expect, unless something happens injury-wise or, something out of the norm happens. I think that Texas is pretty much guaranteed to go 9-3 if they just play to their capabilities and get a few breaks. Now, if they get even a few more breaks, they could be a 10-2 or 11-1 team. And don't ask me which team is going to beat them. If it's Nebraska, if it's Oklahoma, if it's Kansas State, Texas has a hard time with Kansas State. They've had a tough time with them in the past. They play them on the road this year. A&M is better. Baylor is better. You know, in fact, I think Baylor is the surprise team of the conference. But, you know, it's going to be hard to go through there undefeated, and I don't know who's going to beat them, but I'm sure that someone will, unfortunately.
Well, I was going to say, let's maybe perhaps talk some Red River rivalry. I mean, what do you think that's going to be as far as, you know, it'll be neat to see it featuring, of course, two young quarterbacks in Landry Jones for Oklahoma and then, of course, Gary Gilbert.
Yeah, I mean, I just finished watching something on ESPN, Alyssa, talking about who is the best replacement quarterback this year for the Big Four that went to the pros last year, which was Tebow, McCoy, Jimmy Clausen, and Bradford. And the argument was one was for a Notre Dame quarterback and one was for Landry Jones. I'm not convinced about Landry Jones. I mean, he's got to show me a lot more. I mean, you know him probably better than I do. Maybe I understand he's stronger this year and he's got a year under his belt. You know, when those two teams play in Oklahoma, in Dallas, Texas, and Oklahoma, it is as you well know, it can come down to one play. It can
yes.
come down to one penalty. It can come down to one drop pass. I mean, the teams are so close together in talent level, and that intensity of that game is so huge. You know, we've been told this week that it is a 2:30 game on that day on Saturday, so we can at least get some sleep the night before and some rest afterwards. But it's I always look forward to it, and I know you do too.
Oh, absolutely. We love talking about that. Hey, Steve Habel has been along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. This interview, our podcast, go to our e-podcast page at eradiosports.com. You can listen to this interview in its entirety. And he is the contributing writer with Horns Illustrated. But Steve Habel, Mr. Habel, is a prolific writer. He also, you can see his work in a number of magazines, cybergolf.com, texasgolfermagazine.com. So let's talk about one of my favorite sports. Who would have ever thought that, you know, a former basketball player, I have this love and affinity now for the game of golf. And gosh, you know, you think about what's happened over the past couple of weeks, the ruling on Dustin Johnson, Jim Furyk being disqualified for missing, you know, his tee time, and then Julie Inkster. I mean, it's kind of been a little bit crazy. You got to know your rules, I suppose.
Yeah, and all those guys will tell you, and Miss Inkster will too, that that they're 100% in the fault for that. I mean, you got to really feel for Dustin Johnson. I mean, what amazes me about that shot Dustin Johnson hit when he grounded his club was it the crowd that was standing around him, Alyssa. I mean, here's a guy hitting off an edge of a sand trap, off of a bunker, an elevated shot, and he's got people literally standing 3 feet away from him, you know, for 50 yards on either side. I mean, I'm not going to stand there. I don't give a darn what's going on, you know, how good a player he is. But and the stuff with Furyk is unfortunate because
hasn't that happened to all of us, though? Not that I set my alarm on my cell phone, but you just...
I'm sure it happens to all of us. I mean, it's been a long time since I overslept because I don't sleep very well, but there's a... I'm sure that Jim is regretting that today. What's kind of bad is that it is inconsistent to the fact that that the guys that were not in the Pro-Am didn't have to get up for that. But, you know, Jim committed to that, to being a Pro-Am, committed to being there on time, and he didn't make it, and so he's paying the penalty.
Well, can we talk some more about Dustin Johnson? Because it was interesting, you know, everybody had very strong opinions about this, and, you know, some were even saying, you know, it was a matter of due diligence on Johnson's part because, you know, all golfers were given notice about the bunkers, and, you know, you should have read up on that. You should have known the rules. And I guess you just got to be very, very, you know, aware of those types of things at all times.
That's true. And, you know, and Johnson asked the rules official twice on the back nine about certain about specific lies that he thought may be bunkers as well, and he just was zoned in. I mean, you know, he's got, you know, three shots to win a golf tournament here. He didn't really pay attention, I guess, but he's admitted to that. It's and he admitted to the fact that he didn't read the rules in the locker room. And, you know, it's the game of golf is hard enough without having to think about all that stuff, but I mean, it is their responsibility to know it. So
what was your impression of that particular golf course? I mean, it's so beautiful. It almost had like a European feel to it. You didn't even feel like you're in the United States.
Yeah, I think the course looked...
Of course, we're talking about Whistling Straits, yes.
Yeah, the course looked great on television, Melissa. I don't know if I'd want to play it, especially from those back tees, but it's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. A beautiful, beautiful place that Pete Dye's built, and you know, he's kind of diabolical, and that's why his nickname is Diabolical. And he's a, but they've put together a great track there, him and Mr. Kohler, that that, you know, basically opened up the pocketbook to make it look that way. So it's a little bit of Scotland and you know, on Lake Michigan.
You travel all across the country, Steve, you know, covering different types of golf courses, you know, work with Tom Kaida. What is the most beautiful course that you've been a part of or spent some time on?
Wow, I mean, that's really hard. I've been up to Augusta. I didn't get to play it, but I was able to walk Augusta, and anybody who's been there knows how beautiful that is. Liberty National, Tom Kite's design up in Jersey City across from Manhattan is a special place. In fact, they're playing the Barclays this week at Ridgewood Country Club in New Jersey, and it'll return to Liberty National in a couple years. That was a fantastic place to be at, fantastic place to see, because, you know, you're standing, you know, within 600 yards of the back of the Statue of Liberty playing golf, and that's pretty incredible.
Well, it was great. You know, CBS Sports had done a beautiful documentary on that, and that's one of those courses that I know is my husband and our little son, who's now 8, soon to be 9, they were like, I definitely want to, you know, they want to play that. They want to be a part of that. Okay, we're going to wrap up our interview today. We got to talk some Tiger Woods. You know, gosh, your heart just breaks thinking about, I don't know, I'm kind of the eternal optimist thinking, you know, perhaps they can work things out. I really thought even amid all of his, you know, naughty boy behavior and transgressions, that perhaps, you know, they'd be able to keep their family together. But that's obviously not the case. Just what are you hearing in the golf world? Obviously, you're very close with a lot of people in this.
Well, you know, Tiger's, I think Tiger's ready to move on. I think Elon's ready to move on. I think that at this point, it's the best thing for both of them. I don't know Tiger well. I know I've met him a few times and spoken with him, and certainly not about any of his personal business, but he's a just think about you and me. If we were in a situation, we would never be in that situation, but if we were in a thing where we were had all the stress and all the stuff that are going on in those two people's lives, how difficult it would be to play golf at a high level. I think we're seeing the offshoot of that now, and hopefully Tiger's turned the corner and he's a you know, he can be back to where he was before. I mean, I miss the old Tiger, to be quite honest.
Yes, and certainly his family will be in our thoughts and prayers, and that, you know, everybody can be at least amicable and friendly towards each other for the sake of the kids, because they have some beautiful children. So, Steve Habel, we really appreciate it. We have kept you over time, and we appreciate you filling in and sharing some great stuff. I mean, we've kind of jumped around a little bit, talking some Texas football, and then, of course, talking some golf. And if you want to check out some of Steve's articles, specifically with golf, that is cybergolf.com and texasgolfermagazine.com. By chance, do you know how much a subscription is to that? I know my husband and son would love to read that.
Yeah, I would imagine that it's in the neighborhood of, you know, $20 a year or something like that. But you can pick it up at different places and different golf courses. The higher end golf courses have that available to pick up. So.
Outstanding. Steve, thanks so much, and good luck to your Texas Longhorns and a little Boomer Sooner to you.
Thanks, Alyssa, for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead as we wrap up this weekend, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at eradiosports.com. We will be right back here in just a moment.